610 and 13820 kilohertz.
Radio Netherlands presents The Art of Conversation. Do you feel that many of the conversations you have are superficial? Would you like to engage in conversations that show people who you really are? The historian and thinker Theodore Zeldin has set up a charitable foundation in England called the Oxford Muse, which invites people to have more challenging conversations. In this week's Vox Humana, Eka Morgan went to find out more about the art of conversation.
Every human being has their story, and if you really listen, the stories are often of real heroism.
Everybody says, well, I've got nothing interesting to say. But everybody does have something interesting to say, so there's always something to connect with. Human lives are incredibly compelling.
What things are you most curious about? What have you rebelled against in the past? Who would you like to be reconciled with? How much do you need other people's respect? What kind of people do you find most exciting?
These are some of the conversational themes which the Oxford Muse is talking to people about. The historian and thinker Theodore Zeldin created the Oxford Muse as a charitable foundation. It aims to stimulate new kinds of conversation.
I am a person who would like to know who inhabits the world. And the great adventure of the last two centuries was, who am I? And my interest is in saying, no, let us ask, who are you? And let us see the world through someone else's eyes. And that is something which this Oxford Muse is trying to encourage. And conversation is the means by which we do it. And I think that this is the great adventure of our century, that instead of looking at one another through stereotypes and say, because you're Japanese, it must be that you have certain opinions and certain attitudes. No, each person is individual. I am interested in you as a person. I want to know what your experience is, what you can tell me about the world. It's not a question that I ask you, but it is something we do together to see what you can say and what I can say and how out of this something else can be born.
Do you think that conversation has become significantly more superficial than it used to be?
Well, I think in Victorian times, we got in the habit of trying to say what was desirable, and say following etiquette. Hello, how are you? You know, you don't care how you are, but, you know, say things which don't mean anything. We are therefore all wearing masks, and the greatest privilege of our time is to see somebody without a mask. I mean, in the 60s, it was thought the greatest privilege to see somebody without clothes, but... Now, you see, that's not enough. What lies behind? And when somebody tells you something which they very rarely say to anyone, it's a great honour that they give you, best form of hospitality. That creates a bond. And I'm saying that if we start creating bonds between individuals, one by one, and we do it 1,000,000 times, and then 5,000,000 times, and 10,000,000 times, that's how you construct a world where people are willing to listen to others and not scream at them.
I talked about questions that I never talk about and I rarely even ask myself. It flowed very, very well.
I had one of the most interesting conversations I've had for a long time, actually. Hearing that someone else has very similar fears to you and very similar regrets perhaps makes you feel more confident in talking about them, so I'd want to do it again.
These two people both went to a conversation dinner organised by the Oxford Muse.
The Muse, one of the things which we have experimented with and which we're going to do much more of, is having Muse dinners. Conversation dinners, where we put people in twos, give them a menu of conversation, just a list of 24 topics, you know, what you do with your life, why it is that you're scared of certain things, why it is that your curiosity is limited, why it is that you have certain kind of friends and not other kinds of friends, what goes wrong in love and so on, to distract, to put them away from talking about trivialities, which is what one normally does when one meets strangers. And I've tried this out at the World Economic Forum, with people who are sort of running the world, and they have been enchanted to find that they actually could talk about things which were really important to them, and to get away from business talk and to get away from small talk.
I went along to the first conversation dinner held in Oxford. It was like 50 people of all ages and backgrounds were seated in pairs, having never met before. They were given a menu of conversation, full of all kinds of suggested topics. And Theodore opened the evening by encouraging everyone to be honest with each other. I asked people at the end of the dinner what they thought of it.
It's a great idea to get all in a city talking. It's really nice to meet people who want to be open and will treat your openness with respect.
It made me actually realize that it's been quite rare that I've had complete conversations with people in a very calm and genuine way. I thought, well, this is going to be quite superficial. It proved to be the opposite.
It's really good to be honest in a reliable, open atmosphere, which doesn't necessarily happen in real life. But tonight it seemed to be you could be honest with each other and there's kind of major hang-up the next day about it.
It was really good. It was fascinating. If somebody's listening to you and they're asking you genuine questions, that just find yourself more interesting than you might give yourself credit for. So, yeah, I'll be back again.
We just went straight in. There was no apology for going straight in. There was no reason to be slightly embarrassed that you were having a very profound conversation. And I think sometimes people just fall back on the formulaic, the what do you do, where do you live? And it's so much more fun just to throw in these quirky questions. It was fantastic.
I thought it was very interesting. I was a bit apprehensive to start with. But as it happened, I had a fascinating conversation for hours. Like I was and I wasn't even drunk.
In spite of the variety of people at the conversation dinner, the Oxford Muse has been accused of being too middle class.
I can't say whether they're associated with any class, because we have talked with unemployed people, we have talked with people of no education, people of every class, and it's been amazing how much they've appreciated that here's somebody listening. No, it's not a middle class idea. It's quite true that some people are not very skilled at talking, but that's often shyness or lack of practice, and it's something one learns in the same way as one learns to ride a bicycle.
So can conversation be taught?
No, you cannot teach it, you practice it. You've got to do more than just acquire a technique. Conversation is not about technique. It is about widening your own horizons, your intellectual capacity to absorb and to be sensitive to different stimuli. And again, I say the great adventure of this century is to find honesty.
Do you think that some nationalities are better at conversation, at the art of conversation, really revealing conversation than others?
When different countries have reached a point in civilization where there is a certain amount of leisure and interest in the art of life, then conversation flourishes. But now I think what is happening is that young people are everywhere becoming more educated, young women in particular. I think young women are on the point of introducing new kinds of relationships, though many men find that difficult. And there's much that it hasn't been resolved. I think many young women find men cannot talk to them in the way they want to be talked to. Men cannot talk about emotions very well. We have many things to learn.
One of the aims of the Oxford Muse is to create written port people, where they talk about themselves in their own words. Some people write their own portraits, but most are based on a conversation. Then they're written up and published in books and on a website. The Muse has been creating portraits of people in England, France, Romania and the US. Roman Krznarek runs their portrait project in Oxford.
I think we all walk past people in the street every day without looking them in the eye. And I wanted to start engaging with these people, to have conversations with them, to not let myself just walk straight past them, to find out who they were and let them know who I am.
And where do you begin when there are so many people out there?
It's almost impossible to know where to begin, because I want to get to know everybody who lives in this city, and I think it'll take me a very long time. So I'm happy to start anywhere, because I find everybody fascinating, and I hope I can learn from everybody.
Do you really want to know everyone? Aren't there some people who you meet and you find initially quite boring?
I do find some people initially quite boring, just like they probably find me quite boring. And the point of the conversation is to get beyond that. Because I think everybody's had experiences and we all share things. We've all been children. We've all experienced deaths in our families. We've all had pain. So there's always something to connect with. Human lives are incredibly compelling.
How have you found the process of having conversations with people? What have you felt you've discovered?
One of the things I love about the conversations is the way they help me challenge my own prejudices and assumptions about the world. So there's a man who walks up and down Carly Road who's effectively homeless, and I made a portrait of him. And I discovered he has a great interest in philosophy. And he spent 6 years sleeping on the street and every day going to the university library, reading books of Jesus, Marx, Freud, Darwin, and Einstein. And I didn't know this, but when I spoke to him about it, I learned a lot about the human condition, about the importance of respecting other people, many, many things. And that was a revelation for me. And so now I'll never walk past him, and I'll hopefully never walk past anybody without looking them in the eye.
And what have they said that they've got out of the process of having their portraits done?
Well, this particular person I'm thinking of, he said that nobody normally speaks to him. People don't listen to what he has to say because they think he's mad. He's also not only homeless but a paranoid schizophrenic. People think he's an axe murderer. And he said after having his portrait done that he was so glad that somebody was willing to listen to him, to ask him questions, to take him seriously and to show him respect. And I really was extremely moved when he said that.
The man who Roman's talking about, Alan Heumann, says in his portrait how ignored he feels as a so-called loony and paranoid schizophrenic. Alan has no history of violent crime, but when he gave an interview to a local newspaper, their depiction of him betrayed his trust. Here's an extract from his portrait.
Loonies in general are not respected by anybody, and then they lose their self-respect. They are marginalised, our views are not taken into account. They don't do really what we want, which is to provide us with a safe place to be mad in. All of us on the loony scene know that we have been rejected by society, rejected to throw away people that nobody else wants, and the world has turned its back on us. And the local journal once did a piece on me. They came in and said, we want to talk about care in the community. So I gave a biopic to the lady. She published it, double page spread. 16 people killed by paranoid schizophrenics since the act came in, then a little pic of me, and paranoid schizophrenic Alan Heumann, so that, you know, being a potential axe murderer.
So how does it begin? If you've discovered someone you want to do a portrait of, how do you embark on the conversation, and is there any kind of preparation?
Normally when you're making a portrait of someone, it's quite strange to explain to them what we're doing, that we're creating portraits of the city, that we want to find out who everybody in Oxford is. Everybody says, well, I've got nothing interesting to say. But everybody does have something interesting to say. So one of the first things to do is to let them know that what they have to say is important, that people want to hear it. And also, people don't have the opportunity to explore themselves very much in our society. And we explain to people that this is a chance to think about where your own life is leading and where your life could lead. And we have a set of rough questions we use as a guideline to talk to people with, which cover many, many different aspects of life.
In what way do you feel limited or favoured by your background? How have your fears changed over the years? In what way would you like to become more tolerant? What have been the most difficult conversations you've had? How do you think about the future?
I don't like calling them questions. They're not questions, they're just topics. If you want my opinion about something, if I want your opinion about something, I will not ask you that question. I will perhaps start by saying something about my own opinion. And so I'm not interrogating you, I'm trying to get you to show what you have got inside you, to avoid the interviewer. You see, what the interviewer does is press a button and get the result, which comes out automatically, particularly with public figures, who know what they think about everything. Whereas a proper conversation for me is where we'll say something which had never occurred to one before. And that is what the muse is trying to do. Muse means stimulating, inspiring people, and to inspire you to be what you have never been before.
I never ask the questions all in a row. It's not a survey, it's not a questionnaire. Sometimes I don't ask any of the questions, but I do bring up the questions in different ways for different people. I may not ask someone, what have you learnt about the different varieties of love in your life? But I might say, well, I've experienced jealousy in my life. How about you? So there are many, many different ways of doing it, and one has to be sensitive to the person. And by sharing parts of your own life with them, people are more willing to open up and you can have a more fruitful conversation.
But have you found that when you do ask a question straight out of Theodore's book of suggested topics to embark on conversations that get good results?
Normally, you do get very good results because a lot of his questions are quite startling. If someone says to you, what is your sixth sense, which is one of the questions that Theodore likes, it's amazing because nobody's ever thought about what's their sixth sense, or very rarely anyway. And so you get the most surprising, incredible answers. Sometimes people don't have anything to say immediately, and you have to give them time just to think. And that silence is a really important part of the conversation. And then they will say the most astonishing things.
Can you give some examples of what people have said in response to what's your sixth sense?
Some people have said that it's an ability to detect insecurity in other people. Some people have said their sixth sense is an ability to commune with nature in unexpected ways. Some people said their sixth sense is to know when it's the right time to shout at the top of their voices and say what they love about life. And I could go on and on.
I'm here with Gary French, who works with homeless people in Oxford, and Theodore Zeldin had a conversation with Gary and has done a portrait of Gary, which I've read. And it is quite an odd sensation, actually, meeting someone, having read their innermost thoughts. I almost feel like I've sort of had a secret peek into your life, and it's a kind of odd sensation. I mean, do you feel at all odd that I've read those many pages about you, about your innermost thoughts?
No, it makes me feel fine. I think that the idea of the conversations, the thing that I really like about it the most is the normality of it. I'm a normal person, and I'm not extraordinary in any way, other than the fact that we're all extraordinary. And I like the idea that people have read it, because I don't want to hide myself away. The way I was brought up, you hid yourself away, you had no emotions. And that wasn't just by my parents, I mean, that was just the way that it was, or is in England. And I just think that's silly. And frankly, turn that right around, it often ends up leading to people becoming homeless in a way, because they can't deal with the emotional things that often happen in their lives. So I felt it was a really good process to do it, and I found it fascinating. I loved it.
You work with homeless people, and mm-hmm. you very much kind of live in the real world, it seems to me, from the work that you do. You're seeing every kind of problem played out in people's lives.
Yeah.
So I'm particularly fascinated to know your take on the Oxford Muse and Theodore's grand plan, which is to get everyone in Oxford City to know each other through doing portraits, because I could imagine someone like you might think, oh, they're all frightfully middle class, and what is the real likelihood?
Well, I mean, yeah, I probably do think it's frightfully middle class, but at the same time, if you cross classes, if you cross any sort of boundary, a cultural one, a race one, it's got to be a good thing. We live in a society which needs that kind of thing. I mean, I strongly believe in the power of this, to sort of get people to know people that they wouldn't ever know, and then you get a different aspect on life. For me as well, the aspect that I come from is fearsomely working class, and the more aristocratic or big businessman that I can talk to, the better it would be for me, definitely.
And can you really picture people you work with taking the time to read lengthy other portraits of other people?
Yeah. Definitely.
And people you know and friends, you can really see this domino effect of Oxford City getting to know itself.
Because I think you'd it would give you a sense for yourself, and that it's a very reflective thing, I think. If you read somebody else's story and you think, oh, that was interesting, I'm interesting, he's interesting, she's interesting, oh, we're interesting.
I'm with Jennifer Richardson in one of the college gardens at Oxford, and Jennifer's a 21-year-old student here who's one of the people whose portraits for the Oxford Muse, and she's also written a portrait of herself. And the title of your portrait is How a Student Trapped in a Mind I Hated Found a New Form of Communication as a Pole Dancer in a Striptease Club.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want you to think that I've picked you as one of the people to interview solely for this sensational thing about striptease. But okay. What was interesting to me was that in your portrait, you said that you felt that writing a self-portrait was a kind of striptease.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think there's a lot more to just writing your portrait than just giving a list of things you've done in your life and a list of things that you think you are. Similarly, if you're performing a striptease, it's a very beautiful art form, as I think I've laboured at the point in my self-portrait. And there's a lot more to it than just taking your cloth, showing someone what you've got. It has to be sensitively done, and there's a lot more soul that comes through in that than people might first think.
So how did you find the process of doing other people's portraits?
I felt actually very privileged. Also, writing up the portraits is really quite an experience in itself, because you have to listen to all the nuances in their voice and their tone and everything. You can't just capture a person by writing down a string of words. You have to give it a lot more subtlety than that, I think, if you want to do a really accurate job. And I find out, I think, more about myself writing other portraits than I did about myself just writing my own portrait.
And what did you just about yourself by the route of having these long conversations with other people?
Well, one thing that I had dwelt on for a long time, I think, was the relation of my external appearance to who I intrinsically feel I am. And this was something that I had to reflect upon a lot when I interviewed a blind woman named Ellen Bassani. And she told me to pay absolutely no attention to what other people would be thinking of me. And probably the reason that I was so hung up on it was that I was thinking about it too much. So it was sort of a vicious circle. And that's really something that's been very pertinent to me, particularly in my line of business and stuff. So particularly in striptease, physically there's really nothing you can hide, although it's debatable just how much of yourself you really show. And that's something I also wanted to bring across in the portrait.
Which actually is something that a lot of people might think is not something you might want to reveal to the world to read, as it could be quite a private thing.
Well, I'm open about the fact that I love striptease with a passion. I want to feel that other people can know me as I am inside and outside. I don't want to feel that there's a discrepancy between what I present to the world and who I am. And I think that's something that, well, the whole project is very beneficial for that reason. It tries to break down the barriers of conventions, how we perceive people just on a first look, and we associate labels with them. This is something that I was very glad to be part of the project for, to show myself to the world and show someone that there's no reason you should be afraid of being who you are.
The person whose portrait has been done has given their consent. This is what they want to say about themselves to the world, what they're willing for anybody to read, a stranger, a friend, a lover. So when we do a portrait, we will record the person, then I may transcribe parts of the conversation, and then I arrange it into a work of art, into a portrait of them, which doesn't begin, "I was born in 1947. It begins, "My life changed when my son died," or something like that. So the portrait focuses on the main themes which are important in that person's life. It's not a straight chronological narrative. And after I type up the portrait, I show the person what I've done. And they can change it or add to it in any way they like. They can say, "Yes, this is me," or "No, this is not me. I want to change this. I want to add bits to it." So there's a process of continual consent going on. It's not like some kinds of journalism when you go in and you're trying to steal somebody's story. You're trying to give people an opportunity to say things that they want to say. It's always a collaboration between the conversational partners.
How different do you feel the process of having your portrait done is from going to a counsellor?
I've been to counsellors, I've been to therapists, and my experience is that they tend to want to find out what's wrong with you, and they want to delve into the origins of every difficulty that you've had in your life. Whereas the portrait is more forward-looking. It's about where you want to go in your life. When we do a portrait of someone, it's not saying there's something wrong with you. There's nothing with people. That's our assumption. Just we want to find out and give people an opportunity to find new ways of being inspired, to think about where their life is leading in the future.
I'm sitting in Ellen Bassani's office now, and Ellen is one of the first people who had her portraits done by the Oxford Mew. And Ellen is blind, so there's a whole another way that she communicates with people that makes her portrait particularly interesting, in that the Oxford Muse wants people to reach out in a new way, which to an extent Ellen does already.
Absolutely. But there was a time in my life, well, actually the first 30 years of my life, where I was so ashamed of being blind that I pretended that I was sighted. So I did a lot of pretending. So I found, as the years went by, that the real way of connecting with strangers, friends, acquaintances, is to be open with who you are.
And would you recommend other people to have their portraits done?
Absolutely. I truly think that we're in a most critical time of our human history, and one of the ways we can do our bit is to not add to the conflict that is in the world. For me, a true conversation is where the trust is tangible within the gathering of those two people. So I think anything that allows us to open ourselves, reveal as much as we're safe to reveal, and I would hope that that would be more than most people think, because I think every human being has their story, and if you really listen, the stories are often of real heroism.
I wondered if the Oxford Muse's ideas about conversation could be used in conflict resolution between nations.
When one talks intimately with someone, one has a good chance of liking them more. It is quite true that people of two different parties might understand each other better as a result of this, but they've got enormous pressure from governments and from the countries and so on. They are not free agents, and that is what is preventing the resolution of those big hostile, civilized, cultural wars. It's quite hard, but I do think that it is something we have to develop, and that's why I emphasize, rather, not talking between nations, but between individuals. How can you and I resolve conflicts between us? One by one, one by one. Do it a million times with different people. So build up from the bottom, rather than try and get Mr. Blair and Mr. Chirac to solve our problems for us.
So amongst ourselves, are we ready, as Theodore Zeldin thinks, to start asking not, who am I, but instead, who are you?
Most of us find life a heroic struggle. There are so many demands on us, so many internal fears. So to be able to do who are you, you have to do quite a lot of evolving to get to that point, to be willing to truly listen.
We don't seem to communicate to each other too well. Communication is often hurried with strangers, and at best, a hassle. So, yeah, who are you is a great question. And we often say to people, what do you do? And it's such a stupid question. I refuse to say what I do is work with homeless people. It doesn't define me. And it's such a silly question. And who are you is such a better one.
The Art of Conversation was produced and presented for Vox Humana by Eka Morgan. This is a Radio Netherlands presentation.
And it's time now to say goodbye. If you've been with us on shortwave, we have a two-hour shortwave broadcast to South Asia later today, beginning at 1400 UTC on the three frequencies of 9890, 11835 and 12075 kilohertz. We continue now via satellite and the internet, but for now, from Hilversum, this is Guy Wilson saying bye.